Welcome to Ghost Biz here on the Business Report. I'm Gary Struble. Every week I get to chat to the finance ghost who can float through the walls. So he gets to know what's going on in all the companies. Actually, what he does is he reads all the SENSE announcements. And because he's such a smart ghost, he's able to explain them to us. So Ghost, welcome back to the show. Let's start out with a story we've been keeping an eye on for the last couple of months. For a long time, ShopRite Checkers was the darling of the retail sector, it still is, and there was a lot of reporting on what they were up to, where the investments were going. There was a lot of drama at senior executive level for a couple of years. Another retailer has slipped into the limelight over the last 6 to 12 months, but for the wrong reasons. That's Pick n Pay, who've gone backwards rapidly with huge losses, but they've recently completed a recapitalization. And in your most excellent newsletter called Ghost Bites, you talk a little bit about what the latest is coming from Pick n Pay. It's not all bad news. Tell us more.
Hello, Gary. Hello to the listeners. Thanks for all the kind words. Always fun to do this with you. And yeah, well picked up on ShopRite in terms of, you know, they have also had their own issues at times. It hasn't been smooth sailing to get to where they are today. They actually had a pretty disastrous foray into Africa. So ShopRite chose to come home and basically focus on the home market, and I don't think it's a coincidence that that's also when things started to go wrong for Pick n Pay. Pick n Pay was managing to kind of get by while ShopRite was very distracted in Africa. It's kind of like the Eye of Sauron situation from Lord of the Rings. You know, that eye turns and ShopRite was like, hang on, here's South Africa, let's focus there. And suddenly poor old Pick n Pay trying to sneak around the rocks. It wasn't so easy anymore. Anyway, moving on from geeking out over Lord of the Rings. So moving on to Pick n Pay's performance, they've got quite a few problems. And the biggest problem among them is that the core Pick n Pay business is really struggling at the moment. So Boxer, which is also part of Pick n Pay and is due for a separate listing later this year, is doing really well. And that shows us what is possible. It grew 13.5% overall in the 21 weeks to 21st July and 9.5% on a like-for-like basis, which is really good. Alas, Pick n Pay, nowhere near that. Pick n Pay SA supermarkets could only manage like-for-like growth of 2%. Now, inflation is running ahead of that, which tells you that their volumes are still under pressure. And it also tells you that it's very, very hard to maintain store margins when you have inflationary pressure on costs that would be above that. They actually have a good narrative around their trading costs. They actually say that they're well contained. But where they have struggled is on gross margin, which brings me all the way back to the sort of Eye of Sauron comparison. ShopRite is now focusing on the South African markets, and that means that they can really squeeze their competitors because ShopRite has lots of space to do that. So what Pick n Pay has had to do is basically take all the savings from no load shedding and reinvest it in price. That's the official term. It basically just means giving more promotions or being more aggressive on price, which obviously means gross margins come under pressure, and so earnings are under pressure. And that is the overarching problem here. Yes, Pick n Pay has gone and raised money. Yes, they will use it to reduce the debt on the balance sheet, but they are still up against, particularly ShopRite, in this death match. And it's, yeah, Pick n Pay is not Dricus in the ring, or rather in the octagon, let's just say that.
Now, the story from that newsletter that that caught my eye was that of StoreAge. Now, StoreAge is a real estate investment trust, and a pretty good one at that. We are anticipating seeing the property sector here in Namibia really start to go in a different direction with the advent of potentially the development of a serious energy sector here in Namibia. Perhaps just using storage as an example, tell us a little bit about real estate investment trusts and why, for interesting sake, why if the yield is high, then the share price is low. That almost seems counterintuitive. Tell us more about StoreAge.
Yeah, REITs or real estate investment trusts are interesting things. They are generally seen as a hybrid between equity and bonds. So basically the way bonds work is because it's a fixed income instrument, I definitely don't want to get too technical here, but basically a bond pays you a fixed amount 9 times out of 10. And so that means the only way for the yield or your return to change is you need to pay a different price for the bond because you're going to get a fixed amount. You're going to get $10, but your yield is different if you paid $50 for that bond or you paid $100 for that bond. And either way, you're getting out 10, right? In one case, your yield is 20% and in the other, it's 10%. Now, in a REIT, what happens is they are paying a dividend, which grows in theory every year. So it's not quite fixed income like a bond. It does have some growth in it, which is why it is seen as a hybrid between equity and bonds. But in most cases, and obviously excluding craziness like COVID, you do have a situation where that distribution or dividend is very dependable. And like I said, it should grow a little bit every year. So the market goes and values these things based on yield. And if the market is happier to accept a lower yield because, for example, the risks are quite low, it means they are willing to pay more for the share price relative to the dividend that they are expecting, right? So if you're expecting an 8% yield and the distribution coming out of that thing is $8, you are happy to pay 100 rand for that share. That's just how it works. A lot of REITs are trading at much higher yields, which mean much lower share prices because they have a lot of risks in them. Now, what makes the storage model very clever and very robust really is they are literally just selling self-storage. They're not trying to go and negotiate a new lease with an anchor tenant and then, you know, redo the food court, or they're not owning office properties where you have someone move out, leaving three floors empty and you have to subdivide the space. It's literally just a whole bunch of little garages. Each one is a separate contract with someone. And when they churn, you know, there's usually someone else on the waiting list, or there's someone comes through the door quite quickly to pick up the slack. So that's why storage is a good business. And the underlying demographic trend here is people moving into smaller and smaller properties as urbanization continues, right? So it just means we have less space for storage, and hence the name storage. And they go and they build these places in very high density residential areas. So the one example that they mention in their report is Sunningdale, which is sort of just up the road from me here in Cape Town. Ridiculously high growth area. Loads of people have semigrated there from all over. It just ticks the box. Garden Cities is the developer there. And storage has done a property there already, and now they are adding on another one because the performance has been so good there. So the trick for them is to just keep developing in the right places. And the right places means high density property, particularly with people who are somewhat higher income and therefore probably have not just stuff they don't need, but stuff they are willing to pay to store.
So let's turn our attention now to education. And if you're of the age of 50, you grew up in a world where the education was provided by the state, both primary, secondary, and tertiary. And it was really only preschool that was in private hands. However, now the whole value chain sits in private hands. And you have two stories, one around AdTech and then also around Stadio. And both seem to indicate that the trend towards private education is not slowing down. Both those stocks seem to have pretty good news over the last 12 months. Obviously, massively affected by COVID and load shedding, which affects education tremendously. But with those two blips out of the way, things seem to be going pretty well in private education.
So COVID actually wasn't all bad for AdvoTech and Stadio because of the tertiary education focus and specifically distance learning. I think that's more of a Stadio thing, but AdvoTech plays in that as well, as far as I know. If you weren't able to actually physically attend, you know, the traditional universities, UCT, WITS, whatever, then, if you didn't want to waste the year, you might have enrolled online for something through one of those providers. And certainly a lot of people did. We are starting to see a normalization, actually. So contact learning is really picking up again. The world has, to a large extent, normalized post-COVID. I think most things have gone back to really the way they were. And obviously that is not a bad thing for the likes of Stadio because they do have the contact learning option, as does AdvoTech. Difference with AdvoTech is they also have, as you've pointed out, primary and secondary schooling. But where AdvoTech differs from Curro, which is really the third education player in the local sector, is that AdvoTech is targeting much higher income consumers, whereas Curro is playing in that middle market, trying to be slightly better than a government school, but slightly worse than, you know, the AdvoTechs of this world. If you are a car enthusiast and you think about the Porsche range, you know, Curro is very much the sort of Boxster Cayman. Like, it's a very nice car, but it's definitely not a 911. So that's the way to think about it, really. And both AdvoTech and Stadio have done so well in the latest period. Double-digit growth in headline earnings per share. They can put through fee increases. They can grow student numbers. It's all looking very good. AdvoTech makes a particularly strong margin, actually, in the rest of Africa. I think they have schools that are quite strongly aimed at the sort of expat community in certain places, and they can really charge almost what they want, I think, in those places, because there are only a handful of schools that expats are willing to consider. So that's the joy of supply and demand playing out. Final comment on Advertech is they have this business, this resourcing division, effectively. They've had it forever, really, and I just don't know why they hang on to it. They really should sell it, in my opinion, because it actually is such a drag on the group margin. It is the lowest margin business by a country mile, and it takes Advertech out from just being a pure play education business. I suspect that most investors look at Advertech and they buy it despite resourcing, not because of resourcing. So that's a business that they should really consider moving away from. It's a tough place to play.
All right, guys. Now, I'll leave you alone for a little bit. But firstly, and you knew this question was going to come, our favorite company, Trusco, here from Namibia on the JSE, not scared of putting out a press release or two. I'll tell you, the last few weeks have been an absolute flurry from giving up a banking license, which came as a surprise to zero people, to something that did come as a surprise. That was the finding of quite a large diamond. Your interest in that, however, has to do with the comments that they made in that release around valuing the asset, of course, the mine. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yes, good old Trusco. I always, always laugh when I see a Trusco announcement come out on a Tuesday. I even call it Trusco Tuesday because I know for a fact that it's going to allow you to ask me a question on it, Gary. So I'm thrilled that they delivered for you again this week. Jokes aside, I said in Ghost Bites, there's never a dull moment at Trusco, and I stand by it. So their latest announcement, all very exciting and interesting, is the discovery of, and I quote, an exceptional diamond by Maya Mining, in which Trusco has got a 19.5% interest. So, you know, let's just start there. This is a business in which Trusco has got a minority stake. It is certainly not something that they control. Long story short, it is really just a very large diamond, literally. And when you are mining diamonds, if you can find a gigantic one, then you can sell a wonderful story about how the offcuts from that thing are from this huge diamond and blah, blah, blah. You can imagine diamonds are all one massive marketing gimmick at the end of the day, because as we now know, you can grow the thing in a lab. So a naturally mined diamond, or naturally occurring, or however they like to say it, real diamonds, you know, really just a marketing ploy. So when you get something like a very large one, that's quite helpful in terms of selling the story and selling the spice and the excitement around it. What is interesting, as you point out, and as I noted, Trusco is now saying, well, when they value this asset going forward, you know, maybe they'll take into account exceptional finds. And how on earth do you take into account exceptional finds? Is it kind of like, okay, well, over 30 years, there have been, you know, four. So we believe that somewhere in the next, you know, 30 years, there might be another four. We don't know when and we don't know how big because no one knows. And so we'll just guess not only when we're going to find it, but also what the diamond prices will be. Anyway, I'll stop there because I think my thoughts on some of the Trusco's narrative are well documented on the show. At least they keep saying interesting, like exceptional diamonds, let alone banking licenses.
Thanks, Ghost. Remember, you can stay on top of things by checking out the Ghost Bites and Ghost Mail newsletters. You get along to ghostmail.co.za to hear what the Finance Ghost tells you every single morning. You'll be right on top of what's happening in the markets, both here in Namibia as well as in South Africa. That's it for Ghost Biz here on the Business Report. We'll be back next week with more.